Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, with my co-host, Kirsten Milliken. Our topic tonight is ADHD and juvenile justice, accused but not sentenced. And our guest tonight in our virtual studio is Rob Todisco. Today is February the 20th in the year 2013 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to get right into the meat of the topic real quick, but just want to make you aware of just some assets. You can access all of Attention Talk Network, the radio, the video, and Attention Talk News on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Attention Talk Radio. In addition to the radio show, we've also got Attention Talk Video. So all you have to do is go to attentiontalkvideo.com. That's a talk show in the same format as the radio show where we interview experts on a weekly basis on different topics. We also have Attention Talk Video, which I'm going to let Kirsten tell you a little bit about because she heads that up. Kirsten?
I do not head up Attention Talk Video, but I do head up Attention Talk News. So Attention Talk News, it comes out twice a month right to your in-mail. And what that includes is a summary maybe of some of the past shows from way past, not something recent, so that maybe you can go back and listen to something that you didn't realize we had or you'd forgotten about. And then also we've got a listing of our recent and upcoming shows. You can listen to the archives or you can make a plan for a show that you might be interested in listening to that's coming up. I do include one of the Attention Talk videos typically in Attention Talk News, so you have access right there from your inbox to one of the interviews that Jeff has done with our guests. And the Attention Teaser, which is, of course, my favorite. I keep saying that. And we do have some guests and also just some friends that we know in the attention field who are contributing some great work on the field of on the topic of attention for the newsletter. So, again, all you need to do is go to attentiontalknews.com and sign up for that, and it will come to your inbox twice a month.
Excellent. Let's see. Kirsten, have I forgotten anything?
Did you mention the CHAD conference?
I did not. If you have not done so, it's time to start planning for the CHAD conference. I know it's in November, but might as well start kind of thinking about what you're going to do, travel plans, et cetera. So for more of information on that, just go to chad.org. And with that, we'll get into the show. As a reminder to everybody, this is a part of a series that's been taped. This is show number 4. We have one more show next week, ADHD in Prison, The Travesty of Reintegration. And with that, we'll introduce Rob and run the show in its entirety. So just sit back and enjoy.
Rob Todisco is the executive director of the EDGE Foundation, whose mission is to provide specialized coaching for college students with ADHD. He also has a law practice in New York and is a freelance writer. As an adult diagnosed with ADHD, he is an avid runner and an 8-time marathon winner, which is just, or finisher, not winner, finisher, excuse me. Since his diagnosis, he's researched and written extensively on the subject of ADHD and the practical coping mechanisms and systems for adults with ADHD. He is a past member of the National Board of CHAD and a current member and past chair of CHAD's Public Policy Committee and former vice president of ADDA. You know, we could go on and on. Rob really has a lot of credentials behind him. He's also a legal expert, a columnist for Attitude Magazine right now. And he's just, you know, a fascinating, intelligent, and really personable guy. So, Rob Todisco.
With us tonight in our virtual studio is Rob Todisco, and our topic is ADHD, juvenile justice, accused but not sentenced. Our focus of the show tonight is if you have your ADHD juvenile and they've gotten in trouble at school or on the street and they've been accused, but they haven't actually been sentenced to prison or anything yet, that's the space we're talking about. And we're real thrilled to have Rob Todisco on the show today. So with that, welcome, Rob.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Kirsten, this is I know this area is really kind of near and dear to your heart based off of your background and experience, so I'm really excited about today's show. One of the things that we were talking about, because we've done a lot of prep for this show and some other shows that we're doing that are related, but Rob, one of the things that we were talking about, this is if you have an ADHD juvenile that's arrested, one of the most important things to do is to educate your lawyers on ADHD. And when we were talking, you were also talking about educating the prosecuting attorneys and actually the judge. Can you talk about that a little? Talk about that, what it looks like, and why that's so important?
Sure. I think that one of the things that's really important to focus on is that the attorneys have to have a very good understanding and knowledge of not only ADHD in general, but the symptoms that impact their client, because they are the first ones to really intervene, interview the client, and it's really their job and their obligation to advocate for them. And so I believe that the first duty is really of the defense attorney to educate the prosecutor and educate the judge. And there's one other thing I just wanted to add to your introduction.
Yep.
Is that what you said was, and it's pretty accurate, that, you know, either your child gets in trouble at school or gets arrested. But what I want people to understand is, in reality, a lot of times both of those things happen at the same time. It's really getting in trouble in school and, in many cases, getting arrested. And so it becomes a little bit more complex because there's an administrative process that goes on at the school as well as a criminal prosecution. And both of those really have to be looked at simultaneously, and it can become a complex problem. So that's one of the things I want to alert the parents about.
I'm glad you brought that to attention because you are so right in that particular space. So to begin with, it seems to me it might be a little daunting to actually kind of, you know, you're in this kind of panic situation. Now you got to sit down and find a lawyer, and you got to explain ADHD to them and what that means. It seems like that would be kind of a challenge.
It can be challenging, but and I can tell you that there's most parents, unfortunately, don't have a good grasp over how the ADHD impacts their child individually. They've gotten a diagnosis. They know the school needs to do more. They're frustrated by what's going on at the school, and they say things like, well, he's got ADHD. But that's not enough. They have to say things like, one of the problems we have is that his ADHD manifests in a hyperactive way that can oftentimes be aggressive or perceived to be aggressive, and that's one of the things we have. Or our son or daughter is a bright student, but they're extremely impulsive, and they will often make rash decisions without contemplating the characteristics later on. Or this is an outcry because of the frustrations they're having in school. And in that case, even though it may not be a defense to the antisocial or criminal behavior, it really sets up the foundation for saying the IEP is either poorly drafted or not being followed through. And regardless of what happens in the criminal case, we have to address these issues to make sure that this behavior doesn't repeat itself. And so you really need a good working knowledge. So I think it all begins with parents truly doing research about the disability in a general sense, but more importantly, how it impacts their child and how there are red flags, for instance, in their behavior that they could run into these types of problems.
You know, Kirsten,
well, I have a question, though. So say you've got a parent who, you know, they're pretty savvy and they get on the Internet and they kind of know that their kid probably has ADHD either because it runs in the family or, you know, for some reason they know. But they haven't actually had their kid tested and formally diagnosed, or maybe they have, but there hasn't been any testing done. And this happens. They get in trouble at school. They get in trouble with the law, and the parent goes in and says, you know, this is my kid's ADHD. You know, I don't have a report, but I can tell you what it looks like, how it manifests, and how this is related to him having ADHD. How is that going to be received?
Well, first of all, even with a diagnosis and documentation, there are jurisdictions, unfortunately, that receive this with a certain degree of skepticism. That I should say that at the beginning. But the second part of this is it certainly poses more of a challenge to the parents. However, one of the things that you have to do there is really start from scratch and build a record on your own. What I would do is I would start pulling out progress reports, report cards that show a consistent amount of talking out of turn, impulsive behavior, a lack of cooperation, insubordination, all of these things that with, even without a formal evaluation, the best you may have are anecdotal evidence from all of the reports. And remember, it's the school that actually evaluates these kids in terms of their performance. Even if it's not a formal mental health evaluation, the school really kind of, there's those notes that sit on the side of every report card, uncooperative, always late for class, all of these things that typically will be red flags that should have been looked at. And remember, for students that are prior to graduation from high school, the burden ultimately on finding them, diagnosing them, and providing appropriate services rests with the school district. And the parents should certainly not give up. They should point these things out. Part of the criminal process and the process at school is to ask for an evaluation based upon what's going on. In the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, if a student is not classified for special education and is suspended for behavior, but there appears to be an issue there, the parents can ask for an expedited evaluation and meeting to determine if there is something that's going on. And, you know, it may be more difficult, but you certainly have to try there, because not only can it lead to an unfair or unduly harsh punishment, but more importantly, it could lead to a punishment that may make things worse. And certainly, if it doesn't address the underlying issues, we're going to see this repeat itself, and that's really the problem.
I want to kind of pause here for a second. What you said was so spot on, but just to kind of put it into a context is, and by the way, everybody, this show today, there's no magic bullet to this, but we're trying to kind of help give you a map and a way to navigate this process if you're worried about being in it, or you are. And Rob, one of the things that I'm hearing from this is one of the keys is when this takes place, and we didn't talk about it, number one, you need to get your teen or out of the line of fire. We'll come back to that in a second, but the idea of educating this is actually to say, hey, listen, this isn't from the heart. This is the condition, and kind of segregate those two. So here's the person and here's the ADHD. And if you've been in school and you have an IEP in Section 504 and you've been going to the meetings on a regular basis and you've got this huge file and you're walking in, and that can be powerful. If you don't have those types of services at school, still going back through some records and trying to document that, you know, this has been an issue for a period of time, so that you're trying to educate the lawyers and the judges to what's going on, because at the end of the day, if you can get some education in here, punishment or sentencing might be in a more favorable situation for ADHD, because I know we're going to do a show a little later on what's it like to be in prison, and what's interesting to me is how they remove all the structures those with ADHD need. It's kind of tough, but the gist of this is, I'm hearing, is the need to split these two apart and try to educate the best you can and use the paper and documentation as best you can to lay that foundation. Is that an accurate summation from your perspective?
I think it is.
And so one of the keys really is if you're suspecting this, is to make sure that you start putting together these paper trails and stuff. And because once the child is accused and you've got this and you're working with the lawyers and maybe the kid's in detention or jail, particularly if you're still if you have an IEP, the schools have an obligation actually to come in and continue those services, right?
That is correct. There is independently, and one of the reasons it makes the whole situation much more challenging is because pursuant to IDEA and Section 504 and the Americans with Disabilities Act, there is a right that every student has to a free, appropriate public education. And even if there is an understanding as to why the behavior occurred because of a disability, but the behavior rises to such a degree of concern that incarceration is necessary, it still does not take away the burden of the school district to make sure that the appropriate services apply. And in this particular case, or these cases, it's more important than ever, because a breakdown in those services can really increase the risk of recidivism.
Recidivism being repeat, the adjective is basically getting out of the system and going back in, right?
Correct, repeating the behavior, yes.
And Kirsten, from your perspective on this, I know you've dealt in this environment a little bit. Have you been involved with this space a little bit, and particularly the schools going into the jails to actually help those with ADHD when they are accused but waiting sentence?
I was at our local juvenile detention facility early this morning, as a matter of fact, giving some feedback to a young man and his parents. And, you know, I want to kind of lay this out clearly, because I assume, because I've worked in two different states in juvenile detention facilities, that a lot of them are similar, where if your child is arrested, they are not, it's not like going to adult jail where, you know, you post bail and a lot of the time you can get out quickly. A lot of times these kids are held, sometimes for months, while they're awaiting a trial or an appropriate placement or an evaluation or a number of things. So it can be months when they're sitting in a detention pod as opposed to being in the committed section of the facility where more services are usually put in place. So they're not getting the same level of education, access to education. There's usually one classroom for, you know, all the kids that are in detention. And they're not given special education services unless somebody's advocating to get that work brought in and to get, you know, services brought in for them. They also don't get access to the same kind of medical care and all of these kinds of services that they would, and treatment that they would if they were either committed or if they had not been arrested. So here you've got kids who have ADHD and, you know, sometimes a little bit and sometimes a whole lot, who can be off their medication, who can be away from the structure of their regular school in an unfamiliar, uncomfortable setting, which is intentional. And they can, you know, while they may have usually been behind, because they have ADHD, they're going to get even further behind. So it's really important to advocate to get the kids continuing education while they're in that process.
Yeah, this is interesting, Rob. If they are accused and they go into one of these facilities, do they typically continue meds, or do they typically lose access to meds?
Usually, the difficulty becomes stimulant medication, which most of these kids are on. That is usually a big problem, and most facilities will not continue that while they're inside. The other issue is, and Kirsten really kind of hit on this, is that what happens is, first of all, when you are at your school district trying to get services or trying to amend those services, or even if the schools agreed to them to get them implemented, sometimes can drag on, for an unbearably long period of time. But once a student is in a juvenile detention facility, okay, their school district at home where they live still has the responsibility for implementing the plan. So as slow as that school district may move when that student's there, to get them mobilized to give feedback to the juvenile facility to make sure that services are available, and in many of these detention facilities, they don't have the availability of the type of counseling or educational support that these kids need. And unfortunately, the reality is that there's a breakdown and a huge lag time to when these kids get services. And, you know, the concern is keeping, if they're dangerous, you know, if they're a violent youth, to keep them in a situation where they can't harm anyone else, either at the school or in their community. However, that student also has a right to an education and the services, and it is incredibly difficult for parents to get the school to mobilize and communicate with the detention facility to make sure things are happening, and then it becomes an additional challenge to have the juvenile facility actually get those services if they're not readily available. So it's a huge quagmire.
Yeah, I'm envisioning a very ADHD child goes in. Number one, they take them off of their meds, and then they give them idle time in some of these pods, which is just sounds to me a recipe for disaster, which is all the more reason to advocate to try to get the schools to kind of come in as much as, because the more you can keep that person, that juvenile occupied, the better, because one of the things you want to do is you want to keep them, you don't want to create any more problems in the situation, and it sounds to me like this is just, it's tough space, and further argument why a parent needs to stand up and get on this early, because if you can't advocate and get these services in, it's going to do nothing but help at this point.
Correct.
I tell you what, I need to go to a break real quick. For our listeners out there who have any questions, Rob, I presume the best place to go to is still your website at Edge Foundation. That's EDGEFOUNDATION.org, correct?
That is correct. And my email address is rtudisco, T-U-D as in David, I-S-C-O, at edgefoundation.org.
And with that, we'll be right back after these.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Hey. Hey, you.
Are you the parents of a child with ADHD? Does your child need successful task completion structures? We are Hey You, and we make routines fun and easy.
It's time to rise, so open your eyes.
Go to heyyouadhd.com and download our task completion programs today.
Shake it up, shake it up, move our body around.
You deserve the best trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
So we're back here with Rob Todisco today talking about kids who have ADHD who may get arrested and end up in detention facilities, in juvenile detention facilities, and the importance of educating the people who are involved in this system so that the child is getting the best services and the best outcome. So one thing that we're talking about, though, Rob, that I'm realizing we're kind of missing is, you know, I said earlier I was at a juvenile detention facility this morning, and in my experience, a lot of times decisions are not made in the courtroom about what's going to happen to a kid. Oftentimes it's a team meeting where, you know, your mental health professionals and the corrections professionals and maybe the psychologist, the parents and the kid are there, and that's where information is talked about, you know, what led to this situation and what's going to be the best outcome. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things, and I'm glad that you brought that up, Kirsten, because a lot of times in theory, stuff that goes on outside of the courtroom is supposed to involve the student or the defendant in this particular case. The problem is, if they're in a facility, a lot of these conversations will take place in conferences or meetings that an attorney will have with the prosecuting attorney and the judge or the therapist or the state's expert. And it's really important, as important as it is for parents, for the attorney to has an obligation, I think, twofold. One of them is to make sure their client, even if they're a young child, understand to the best of their ability what is going on around them. And also, we said earlier that no one knows your kid like you do as a parent, but we really can't overlook the fact that it's really crucial to involve that student in this process. Make them know that the attorney's voice that's speaking for them is really their voice. And the attorney should not only speak to the parents about how this disability manifests itself, but speak to their client. They have an obligation to their client as opposed to the parents who are probably paying the bill. And so they should ferret out from the defendant why this behavior, what frustrates you, what's holding you back at school, what sets you off, all of these things to let that student know that they are central to this process and really have a better grasp of what to tell the judge and the others involved in those meetings.
I also want to point out that I just lost my train of thought. That's horrible. when that happens.
Well, that's okay. Just kind of catch yourself. Again, the theme here, I think, parents, is the education in this process and be involved in this process and realize that there's a lot going on here. Particularly here, this a lot of it's happening outside the courtroom is fascinating to me because I can see how that shapes, even if decisions are being made in the courtroom, the conversations outside the courtroom have an impact on how and what's being paid attention to in the courtroom. And if you can have those conversations early on, because, again, I know, Rob, we've talked in the past that sometimes you can go through this process and a kid can be guilty, but there's different options in terms of where they go, maybe sentencing or other types of programs that could be more beneficial. It goes back to the key is get involved in educating and getting involved in these meetings outside the courtroom.
Correct.
I know what I was going to say.
Go ahead.
The thing I was going to say is, I know that we have a lot of ADHD professionals who listen to the show, and there is a role for them. And I have taken the opportunity because I know our local corrections people, our probation officers in the juvenile system, and they once a month have to have a training session. And I ask at least once a year to go over there and do a training session with them. And it's been for the last few years, it's always been around ADHD. And they all think they know about ADHD, but there's always more that they can learn. So informing the probation officer, because they can be a good advocate for the kids in a lot of cases if they have an understanding of what's going on. So I just wanted to get that piece in, that there's another avenue for learning even before this whole thing hopefully comes to this.
That's also important. I'm sorry. I was just saying that's also important to follow up on because there are a lot of issues that still are emerging. There's a lot more research now on how ADHD and other co-occurring conditions manifest themselves in on a gender basis, and the symptoms could be very different among males or between males versus females, and where the traditional sense of ADHD is that it's a male-based disorder is not what we know today, and that updated information is really important. You don't want to assume that people have a grasp, because even those of us who are immersed in, you know, all of the new research about ADHD learn something every single day, so it's an ongoing process, and that really has to be stressed.
Absolutely. Walking into a girls' unit, you know, most of the time they'll say, well, these are just teenage girls, and teenage girls have, you know, these attitudes and whatever. But I can tell you right now that you're going to have the same percentage of girls as boys in those detention facilities who have ADHD and the co-occurring disorders that go with it.
Rob, earlier you were talking about recidivism. I can't even pronounce the word recidivism. Can you speak to do you know any statistics, or you got any kind of range of how many kids that have ADHD that get into the detention system actually end up coming back multiple times?
Actually, I don't, but off the top of my head. But what I do know is that there's been an extensive amount of research on how drastically recidivism rates drop with added education programs. GED programs, for instance, for students, recidivism rate between 25% and 50% in many cases, based upon studies that I've seen. And so that can really make a dramatic difference or really have an impact. And a lot of these juvenile judges, I will have to say, you really think in many cases that when you go in there, you are fighting against the tide. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of juvenile justices don't like the fact that they see the same kids over and over and over again and really are interested in doing something to end that cycle.
Interesting. Well, in a prior show, we also talked about, you were pointing out that there's three jails in New York, Chicago, and L.A., if I'm understanding correctly, that house more individuals with mental health issues than our largest mental health hospital. You want to just kind of review that with the listeners real quick?
Sure. I think that's a real staggering and sobering statistic. that, and again, I want to stress that each of those three jails independently, not cumulatively, house more mentally ill patients than any mental health facility in the country. And what's even more significant is that individuals, based upon a study that was done in New York at Rikers Island, stay in the system up to five times longer than inmates without mental health concerns. And so it's a huge drain on the system, in addition to the fact that these inmates are not getting any type of effective services or treatment at all. And we truly believe that there are a much higher number of individuals in the system that are undiagnosed and have not been tested.
And the reason I asked you to repeat that a little bit is that I'm just sitting here in my mind saying, okay, I'm a parent, and I'm freaking out. I'm in this situation, and I've got to go educate my lawyer on ADHD. And, you know, those guys, they bill when they're going to the bathroom almost. And to spend the money to educate them, say, listen, to do that is a little bit of a daunting task, but I think that sometimes in your world, particularly with those with ADHD, certain times that you might want to spend some money to save some money, and one of those is when they go off to college for the first time, it makes a lot of sense to spend the money on a tutor or a coach or something to deal with that transition, because after all, you're spending all that money for tuition. You don't want to fail out the first semester, which can happen many times. This is another time, it seems to me, that, you know, spending a buck here or two to do this thing right really might make a lot of sense, even if it is paying a legal bill a couple hours for them to sit down and kind of understand what's going on. You want to comment on that? Does that make sense to you, Rob?
It does make sense to me, and I think really what happens is, in many cases, parents of students that have potential or are at risk for this type of behavior just kind of try to ignore it and hope that phone call never comes. And I can tell you this, even though attorneys cost a lot of money, like doctors do, I can tell you that it always costs a lot more money and anguish when you call them in an urgent situation, in an emergency situation. And I think that money is well spent with either a therapist or a coach to really identify a lot of the issues that are potentially sparking antisocial or potentially criminal behavior. Paid up front can really pay off dividends in not only the cost that you would have to incur in a legal defense down the line, but also in terms of your child's future, which is priceless, really. And one of the reasons, Jeff, that I expanded my practice from being, I'm a former prosecutor and have been a criminal defense attorney for many years. And one of the reasons I started practicing special education law is because as a criminal attorney, I was often frustrated that I get the call when it's too late, when things have already gone horribly wrong. However, if I was working with the family or putting them in touch with an advocate when that child was maybe in third or fourth grade and designing and putting the effort and resources into designing an IEP or a 504 plan that addresses or a behavioral intervention plan that addresses those needs, I think there's a much lower chance that I'd be getting that emergency call later on. And that's why I do both of these.
Yep. Let's have, we need to run to a break real quick. Again, for our listeners, if you want to learn more about Rob or contact him, go to edgefoundation.org, and we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We've got Rob Tedisco in the house, and we're talking about juvenile justice accused but not sentenced. We've talked about the need to educate your the lawyers and the judges in the process. We've talked about the need to be involved, to get your juvenile involved in this process. We've talked about being in these meetings that are taking place outside of the courtroom. At the end of the day, before this show started and listening to the show, it really sounds to me, Rob and Kirsten, like one of the most critical things is begin to kind of, again, separate. There's the kid, and then there's their ADHD. And if we can separate those two, the system can wait for. But if not, they're going to lump it all together, and they're just going to get a kind of a negative reaction. And being diligent about trying to make that distinction can pay some spades. Is that what you guys are taking away, or is there some additional things that I think on top of that you want to point out?
Well, I think that's a real. Oh, go ahead.
Thanks, Rob. And one of the things that that we're typically identifying when a kid is being evaluated is, are they criminally minded? Because there's a difference between committing an act that's a crime and being criminally minded. And most often, if you can tease out what's ADHD and what's this kid, you'll see that they're not usually criminally minded. It has to do with their impulsivity, their hyperactivity, maybe their anxiety or depression or substance use. And that needs to be brought up, because you don't want somebody who's not criminally minded being put in a criminal setting.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
I think that the other things I would add to that is impulsivity, which I think in many of these cases is the real culprit. These students, either from being bored or frustrated or having a lack of structure, oftentimes will give in to impulse, even though they generally know the difference between right and wrong. And one of the things that's really important is to show that even though the behavior is inexcusable, there is often an inability to control those impulses. And if that is addressed, if the ADHD is addressed, what you have, if you separate that out, for instance, as you said earlier, Jeff, if you separate that out, what you have is a bright student that really could have a future here. And I think that is really important to always keep in mind.
Interesting. So we wrap things up. Any last comments, Kirsten?
I think I've said everything that I have to say, and I think that you've summed things up nicely, which is, we really need to educate people who are in the system. It's part of what we've been saying all along. And look at what is contributing to the situation that may have to do with ADHD.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Rob?
The only thing I just wanted to add, just to keep as a recurring theme, is to avoid the perception that you're using ADHD or any disability as an excuse for the behavior. I think you have to stress that you are putting those theories forward to understand the defendant and to understand why this behavior occurs, with a view towards preventing it from happening in the future for the protection of your client as well as the public and the rest of the kids at school or wherever. And that's really important.
I think that I'm really glad you brought that up, because, and I'd like to kind of pause, because that is so, so important. We've talked to Ari Tuchman and some other people on our show about the difference between an excuse and an explanation. An excuse is like, you're like the victim in the whole process, and woe is me, blah, blah. But as you use it as an explanation, you're still taking the responsibility, but you're explaining why the behavior is taking place. And I think that if you go into this and you make sure that you're not using it as an excuse, but you're using it as an explanation, that changes that conversation a little bit. Like, no, we understand what took place, But to explain why it took place, it's the impulsivity as a result of the ADD, and this person's not criminally minded. That changes that conversation, and if you can make that turn, it seems to me that the outcomes of that process would just be better. So, Rob, that was I'm really glad you brought that up because I think it's real important.
Can I just make one last comment that does go along with that, which is bringing up the ADHD doesn't have to do with making an excuse. It has to do with also informing what comes next. If this is a kid who's prone to impulsivity to the extent that he would commit a crime, we need to make sure that there are treatment and support resources in place that take that into account. You can't just say, okay, you're free to go. This is an impulsive kid. You need to put protection in place to make sure that he is not recidivizing, coming back into the system again.
And that's a great segue because we're going to do another show on this topic with Rob, and that's actually when they're in prison. What a travesty it is, because imagine you get sentenced, you go in, no meds are available, no resources available. They have structure that's there. They're not taught that stuff because when they are released, it's really kind of a toxic world to go in because all the things that you need to kind of build those skills are kind of removed, and then the person goes through and has to go back out. So I encourage you to go listen, look for that show. If you're listening to this, it will follow this show, but I encourage you to go listen because it will be a very insightful show. So with that, Kirsten, as always, always enjoy having you as my sidekick on the show. And Rob, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
Reminder, everybody
Thank
else,
you, gentlemen.
For more information on Rob, go to edgefoundation.org.